That's great. So hopefully this talk will try and give you just a broad overview of how hardware can actually radically change software. That's the sort of basic premise of the talk. So Microsoft Research has been going for almost 20 years. Not a lot of people know that. It's now up to about 800 full-time researchers worldwide. There's about 8 research labs worldwide, as far-flung places as China, India. The main base is in Redmond, over in Seattle, Washington State. And there's a lab, the closest lab to you guys, is in England, in the UK, in the Cambridge area. So how many people have visited Cambridge? Great. A small number. It's highly recommended to come. It's a very small town, steeped in history. Famous for the university, I guess, first of all. Famous for a lot of academics. So Isaac Newton being one of the main ones. Famous for less, there's also less famous academics that went there, like, for example, Prince Charles. Not many people know that, but given the royal wedding that's going to happen on Friday, I thought I'd just throw that one in. Okay, so there's also a lab there, which was built in the late 1990s, Microsoft Research Cambridge. There's about 6 groups in total in various different parts of computer science. How many of you have heard of the F-sharp programming language? Wow, excellent. That's a great number. So there's a programming principles and tools group, and part of that group were actually involved in inventing F-sharp. And that's kind of one of the purposes of the lab, is to look beyond the products that we have now, beyond the work that's happening within the product groups, and look forward to future products or future ideas for products. And F-sharp is one of them. You've all probably heard of Kinect. That's another example of work that was done at Microsoft Research Cambridge. So the computer vision group there were actually involved in the body tracking algorithms. So there's a computer vision group, there's a programming principles group, there's networking and systems, and then there's our group, which is called the Sensors and Devices Group, and we're the hardware group in a software company, which makes for an interesting experience. So the basic premise of our group is based on this one ethos. So what we're really interested in is creating novel hardware that can radically change the user interface. And I've highlighted novel hardware because we're not about taking off-the-shelf hardware. We're about building gadgets ourselves, because that can really lead to something that bubbles up to the user that's radically different than what they've experienced previously. I've also highlighted user interface because we're not just engineers looking to, build PCBs and build these kind of devices with blinking LEDs. We're actually interested in what experience that can lead to in terms of the user interface. So talking of user interfaces, anyone recognize this user interface? This is Windows 2. It was actually before my time. I was a Windows 3.1 man. It came out in 1987. It looks pretty retro, right? It doesn't even have any color on there. So this is an example of a very old and clunky user interface, right? But actually, if we look closer, has it really radically changed? Well, we have the mouse cursor. We have a button. We have several buttons. We have windows, and we have menus. So actually, the fundamental ways that you interact with computers, the user interface hasn't radically changed for over 20 years. So why is that? So I guess one of the arguments that we make is about the hardware. So let's take a look at the hardware back then. So this is one of the first personal computers. This actually gave birth to the notion of Windows, icons, menus, and pointers, WIMP-based interfaces, the graphical user interface. How many people actually know the history of this device here? Anyone? Show of hands? One person. Tell me. Who invented it? Yes, that's right. This is the Xerox Star. It was invented by Alan Kay and colleagues at Xerox PARC. It was one of the first personal computers. It gave birth to a whole suite of other computer devices. And this is a newer desktop PC. So can we, when we actually look at the hardware, sure, it's slimmer, it's slicker, it's black, it looks like it performs much better. But fundamentally, the hardware hasn't changed. If we actually look at the input and output, there's no difference between these two. You have a keyboard for input, you have a mouse for input, and you have a vertical display for output. So fundamentally, there hasn't been much of a shift in terms of hardware. So one, you know, counterexample to that is mobile phones, right? They have radically changed the landscape of user experiences and user interfaces. And that was because it was a new hardware platform that gave birth to a whole suite of applications and software that followed. So the real mantra of this talk, if you're going to remember anything from this talk, is that hardware matters. I don't have any cool Windows shortcuts to show you guys, but I did actually learn a few in the last talk. So that's the takeaway message. Hardware matters. That's the real message that I want to hammer home. So I'm going to give you a few examples of work that we've done in the past. How many of you have heard of Surface, Microsoft Surface? Awesome. How many own a Microsoft Surface? So actually, we'll come to that issue and how we're addressing it with some of our research. But when I joined Microsoft, one of the projects that we were involved in was Surface Computing. And the idea here was to try and build a computer from scratch, from the very beginning. Throw away everything. Throw away the mouse. Throw away the keyboard. Let's start from scratch. And the design that we came up with was something that didn't actually use a keyboard or mouse. It was basically touch-based. But not only touch-based, it was in the form of a tabletop. So your desktop computer became a desk, basically. It was a desktop form factor with an embedded screen inside a table. And the one thing that I really want to highlight from that work is that it wasn't just about touch. So Surface Computing has become synonymous with touch and multi-touch and all the cool things that you can do with multi-touch. But it was more than that, and that's something that I want to demonstrate. So this is the device that we built. It has been compared to many things. It's been called a big-ass iPhone, which is something I really want to stress. So before the iPhone was launched, we were working on this device in research, and it wasn't just about touch. And that's what I want to just give you an example of here. Which really shows that we could have done, we can do things radically different with the sensing capabilities of Surface. So here we have a little game. It's a tank game where we place a tank on the tabletop. We can actually detect the tank because there's a barcode underneath the tank. We can remotely control the tank, and the computer stops the tank from falling off the edge of the table. We can also shoot virtual objects with the tank and navigate around this landscape, this virtual and physical landscape. But not only that, we can place another tank in the other corner and get the computer to fight against us. So this is a remote-controlled tank which is getting messages sent to it over infrared through the display surface, and it's getting remotely controlled by the computer. So this really demonstrates that Surface Computing was not just about touch. It was about physical computing, about tangible computing. And I'm going to talk about another example that we've worked on more recently called FinSight. So this is Surface 2.0. So when we go back to that first image of Surface, we see something which is relatively large in size. And the main research question here was, how do we make it thinner from a technical perspective? How can we make the device thinner? So let's start with Surface. When you actually delve deep under the hood, you see there's a reason for the size of the device. There's cameras inside there that are doing the sensing. There's infrared illuminators that are illuminating the screen and sensing touch that's happening on top of this diffuse surface. And then there's a projector that's projecting an image onto the diffuser that's actually rendering content to the user. So there's a reason why there's this bulky optics in the device. That's the way we do the sensing. It's inherent to the device. So how can we change that? How can we come at it from a different approach? Well, you could think about changing the projector, throwing away the projector and replacing it with an LCD screen. But then you've still got the problem that the cameras need to be far away from the screen so they can image the entire screen. And that's where we started to think about new types of hardware. So just a very quick overview of the idea here. So the idea was to try and take an LCD and embed some sort of sensing that was camera-like, that would allow you to image not only hands but objects, but to replace this need for a large optical path behind the display. And the way we did that is by really, well, first of all, taking apart a lot of LCD displays, which was fun. And that's one of the great things of my job. We get to play around with technology, take things apart to try and figure out how they work. When you do actually take the LCD apart, you start to realize it's made out of a number of different optical layers. At the front, there's an LCD and polarizers. Within it, there's also a diffuser, brightness-enhancing film. And then at the back, there's the light source. The light source shines light, visible light, through the display, through these optical elements until they hit the first polarizer. And then the polarizers basically, with the LCD, combine together to allow you to actually control light moving through the LCD. So the backlight, interestingly enough, most people think that the light source is across the entire back of the LCD. It's not. When you take it apart, you realize that a lot of these LCDs are actually edge lit to save costs. So they have a light source around the edges, and then they have some sort of light guide, a plastic light guide, which allows the light to reflect from the back to the front. So the back of the LCD is actually free for us to put hardware into. And that's what we did. We put these infrared emitters and sensors inside the LCD. So these are infrared sensors that work in the infrared spectrum. And it allows us to actually shine infrared light through all of the layers of the LCD and look for reflections of that light when our fingers and other objects are touching the LCD or close to the LCD screen. So this is the hardware that we actually developed. In the top left-hand corner, you can see an emitter and sensor pair, an IR transceiver. So we have a series of these stacked together in a grid. So this is a 5x7 grid of these transceivers. So each of those becomes one pixel that we can sense on the surface. So in our first prototype, we actually put three of these sensor grids together, and then we took an LCD apart and wedged the sensors at the back. So we actually carefully cut holes where the emitter and sensors have to be in the back of the LCD. It was interesting. This is a Dell laptop, and Dell actually phoned me up on the day that we were doing this work, and they said, "Did we want to extend the warranty?" Which I think we definitely voided. So after that first set of experiments, we were getting good results, especially in sensing touch. So now we went one step further. We built something which was a little bit more sophisticated in terms of the hardware. So this is 30 of those sensing grids stacked together across the entire LCD. So this is the sort of image you get. It's a very low resolution image in the infrared spectrum of objects that are touching the surface. So we've heard about megapixel cameras. This was more like a kilopixel camera. It was literally 1,000 of these sensor pixels. Once you do a little bit of work on the software side in terms of interpolating the image, you can get to something that looks more like hands, right? From the pixelated image, you can go to something like this using some interpolation techniques. And this is an example of us actually interacting with it. So in the bottom right-hand corner, you can see this interpolated image. And you can see the level of detail that we pick up with this LCD screen. So here I can place my hands on top of the screen, but I can also place a mobile phone on the screen and sense that. So here we can actually image the mobile phone. We can place a remote control and image that alongside the mobile phone. So now we can enable a variety of interesting applications, but in a thin form factor. So here's the typical touch application, but now we can take just a passive painting brush and start to paint on the surface, and we can sense that using the infrared sensors. And we can sense the detail of the stroke, so we can adapt the stroke based on whether we're pressing hard or not. You know, this is demonstrating that we can do touch alongside this. Here's another interesting demo. So here we just have a sheet of plastic with some IR reflective tape around it, and we can detect the outline of that and actually display graphics underneath. So we can track this plastic tangible object, and now we can change the color of the paint. So this was a fun little application and fun little project called FinSight, which really just demonstrates where surface computing can go. It can become thinner form factor. And in fact, there's a technology that now Samsung are partnering with us in developing called Sensor and Pixel, which is going to allow this to happen for real. So one of the things that I wanted to just very quickly touch on, so to speak, is most people, when they think about multi-touch, they think of interacting like this. So photo stretching, rotating photos. Multi-touch has become synonymous with us interacting using our fingertips, not really using our whole hands. But what we saw with both Surface and with FinSight is that we can sense a lot more than just fingertips. So why not use that information? We talk about natural computing. Why not actually try and bring a lot more physical interaction to surface computing? So here's some examples of the ways we interact in the real world. And a lot of those interactions don't manifest themselves in surface computing applications currently. It's all about fingertip-based, very careful interaction. So the sort of interactions we try to enable with this project, leveraging a physics engine, is a lot more about contour-based interaction. So we're using the full detail of the hand. This is a virtual ball that's running on the surface computer, and we're actually interacting with it in a number of different ways. And it's not scripted in any way. We haven't sat down and said, you know, once there's three fingers on the device, on the ball, react in this way. We've actually taken a physics engine and kind of retrofitted it to the input that you get from a surface computer. So that leads us to, you know, very interesting interactions where you can apply torque to this ball by spinning it using multiple fingers. You can stop it immediately by putting your fingers up on the top. So this was a fun way of enabling more natural interactions with surface computers. We took this work a little bit further. So here we're interacting with a 3D scene from above. And we can stop these dominoes just by placing our hands down, the sides of our hands rather than our fingertips. Physics engines aren't just about rigid body simulations, so this is non-rigid simulations where we can do things like tear the material. This is, you know, a virtual sheet of material that we're tearing apart. So there's some really fun effects that you can play with using these physics engines, but this was really about enabling new forms of natural interaction with the digital. And again, it's because of the new hardware that we've developed that we could take these interaction techniques and enable those. You can't do these sort of things with regular touch sensors like capacitive or resistive touch sensors. So in that work, we came up with one really major limitation, which I wanted to just briefly touch upon. Some of you may have spotted it already. So most touch computers, most surface computers, are about on-surface interaction. You can't really do things like pick something up and put it into this cup, for example. So when we're interacting with these balls, we can't just simply pick them up and put them into the cup, which is a very natural thing you would want to do in the real world. We do it every day. we actually interact in 3D. That's just the way the real world works. But with touch computers, you can't really interact with 3D. So what we wanted to do with the next project I'm going to show you is try and enable 3D interaction on the tabletop. To really understand what you need to do on the hardware side, you have to look at the Surface computer again. So fundamental to the Surface computer is not just the sensing elements, the cameras, or the projector, but also what's highlighted as number one, the projection screen itself. This is used for display, and this is actually used for sensing, because the diffuser actually scatters the light that's being illuminated from below and the light going to the cameras, which allows you to only sense the things close to the surface, not far away. So what we wanted to do is actually experiment with that diffuser. Is there a way of us changing that technology so that we can sense above the surface? Because in a standard diffuser, you can't go beyond like a few millimeters. There's a tiny bit of hover, but beyond that, everything is very blurred. To really demonstrate that, here's the sort of sensing that you get if you look directly through the diffuser from the cameras within the Surface computer. So you can see when we touch the surface, we get very accurate, very bright spots where we're illuminated by the illuminator below. But away from the surface, the light is just too scattered for us to get a signal of the hand. It's far too attenuated, very blurred. So what can we do? So with this project called Second Light, we tried to almost come up with a new design for the diffuser. So this is the technology that we developed. So this is a new type of diffuser which can be controlled electronically. So when we apply a voltage to this diffuser, it can go from a diffuse state where it's frosted so you can project onto it to clear, so that you can actually see through it. And we can control this electronically. So this is just an example. We have the word Second Light written on here. And you see, as we apply the voltage, we can see the text underneath the diffuser, which is typically getting scattered, is getting blocked by the diffuser until we apply the voltage. And then the word's revealed. So from the bottom of the Surface computer, from the cameras itself, this is how the technology looks. So we've literally just applied voltage to this screen. Now we can see through the screen. You can even see my face through the screen, right? Let me just replay that again. So you can see we're completely frosted. My hand's not visible when it's lifted off the screen. And then we apply the voltage right now. And you can see my hand becomes clear again. So we can use this trick to develop a diffuser which is clear half the time. And we do this by rapidly switching between clear and diffuse so fast that your eyes can't keep up. They see a persistent image through persistence of vision. Whereas, in fact, if you have a camera synchronized to this switching, you can see that it's clear half the time, and you can actually see through the display. So that's the real trick behind this. This is the unit that we built. So we built an even bigger Surface computer in some ways. Lots of electronics in there. I'll get back to the projectors, because there's two of them. Some of you may have spotted in a second. That's another interesting capability. So it's really this new type of diffuser that gave us this opportunity to come up with 3D interaction on the tabletop. And the camera is synchronized. The real important step is to synchronize the cameras to the switching of this diffuser. So they look at the screen when it's clear, and they look at the screen when it's diffuse. This is a front-on image. So, going back to our little problem that we were trying to solve, we're trying to get the balls into the cup. And this is actually, the camera now is out of sync with the diffuser, so you can actually see it switching, but when you're looking at it with your eyes, you only see a static image. So this is imaging in the clear state, and we have some very simple gesture recognition to detect this pinch gesture when your thumb and forefinger touch one another. So now we can start to interact beyond the hover space of a surface. So we can pick up the ball and actually place it into the cup. So the other thing we're doing here, you might spot, is we're rendering shadows of the arms back to the user. So here, this is almost a feedback mechanism, which allows the user to get a better sense of where they are within this virtual world. So, and we're fading the object as well as you lift it up off the surface, just to add an additional touch. So it's really about trying to give the user the impression of actually taking this object off the surface and interacting with it. So what about, that's the sort of input side of things. What about the output side? So we've got the cameras synchronized to these to the switchable diffuser, but what about the projectors? Could they be synchronized in a way to allow us to project an image through the display? So you'll notice we had two projectors in the initial prototype for this. We actually switched to using stereo projectors now. So this is a very simple example of how you can leverage that projection. So now we have just a sheet of diffuse plastic that we place on top of the screen, and we're projecting two images. The images are synchronized in that one image is the through state of the other image. So it's revealing more information, metadata about the sky at night, or metadata about this image, which is just text. It's not the inside of the cow or anything. but you can see we can actually, your eyes, because through persistence of vision, they see two different images, even though we're actually switching the screens very quickly. But we can now display two completely different images on top of the surface. So the final bit kind of combines the two together. So now we're using the camera underneath to sense, and also using the projector to project on the surface and through the surface. So now we can track a sheet of paper with just some sheets of reflective tape. This is similar to the paintbrush example where we were changing the color, but now in 3D. So here, we just have some infrared markers on the sides, which show us the outline of this object. We can then track it, and we can project any content that we want. So this could be a document that you've just taken from your Surface computer and you're reading it up here in a more comfortable pose. So that's Second Light. That's that was really looking at 3D interaction beyond the surface itself. I'm going to finish up with some examples of new types of input devices. And I have one here, which is an exciting one, which we'll get to and hopefully do a live demo. Anyone recognize this? Please shout. It's the first mouse by Douglas Engelbart. So invented in Stanford in 1968. It looks archaic. It's made out of wood. The mice of today aren't made out of wood. But the basic technique is very similar. Douglas Engelbart got the design of that device very, very right from the very beginning. So there's actually two rotary encoders. There's one very evident on the front of the device and one to the right of the device, which is just sensing this displacement on the table. So this allows you to do 2D sensing on the table. And the mouse is the best device when it comes to accurate sensing on any surface, very accurate sensing, allowing you to move a cursor across multiple screens very quickly, but very precisely select at the same time. How many people prefer the mouse to the touchpad? That's a good number. It's probably 50-50. So, you know, the mouse is one of the best technologies for pointing. But what about all the multi-touch stuff that we see? So we've started to see multi-touch pads. What about multi-touch mice? So this was a project that we started a few years ago. And again, some of you will probably have heard of the Apple Magic Mouse. But our design ideas came around the same time, and they're a little bit more crazier in some ways, and I'm going to get through to those. But first, I'm going to talk about one that actually made it into product. This is a capacitive-based mouse, which has a capacitive sensor that's formed onto a flexible substrate across the surface of the mouse. The real innovation here is we're not using just a flexible PCB. We can actually create these capacitive sensors in a completely flexible form, so we can do compound curvature, which allows us to come up with new form factors for the mouse. So I'm going to give you a quick demo, but this device is now being released. It's called the Microsoft Touch Mouse. Have people heard of this? Show of hands. Only a few people. So really what this is enabling is bringing multi-touch to the masses. It's allowing multi-touch sensing on a form factor that we're all used to. And I'll just give you a very quick demo of this. So if I launch the application here, I have to apologize for the state of my desktop. So here we can actually see the raw sensor. So as I'm touching the surface of the mouse, we can sense these touch points. So I'm touching with two fingers, and we can sense those. This is the raw image that we're getting from the capacitive sensors. And now we can start to do touch interactions. So two fingers up and down, you can kind of see the visual feedback by the mouse cursor, allows us to maximize and minimize. Or we can minimize the window away. Normally, when you do that in Windows, the window's gone, but we've actually added a feature to get the window back as well. So that's the raw data. So what can we do beyond that? Well, we can dock this window to the left and to the right, which is, again, there's Windows shortcuts to do this, but we can do this just using touch gestures. Here, I'm just swiping my fingers to the left and to the right. We can also... let's bring up some photos here. So again, we can swipe this to the right. And we can use now a thumb to go left and right. So this is going backwards and forwards. This is sending back and forth events to this window. And I'm literally taking my thumb and I'm swiping it across the mouse here. It's a very natural way of actually controlling navigation through a document, like a web page, for example. So the other feature that we have, three fingers up, kind of does an expose thing. So this is new. So this is how you do task switching with the mouse. So now you can select these windows. Again, three fingers up allows you to select. Three fingers down shows the desktop. Three fingers back up, again, allows you to select. And that's it. Very simple. Has a few more features than, say, the Magic Mouse, which is really about scrolling. The sensor allows us to do a number of different things. And especially the thumb flicks feel really natural, and the three fingers and the two fingers up and down feel really natural for controlling windows. So we're excited about that. So just to wrap up, so that was the capacitive mouse sensor that we developed. It was one of five prototypes that we developed early on, and it was by far the most sensible, which is why it got productized. I'm going to show you some of the more crazier ideas, and shout if you think they were just way too crazy or not. And actually, let's start with the craziest of them all. So this is Artie Mouse. It kind of looks like, you know, Mickey Mouse, if you look at the two islands off to the top. So this was a mouse, well, three mice in one. So we took apart three different mice, and we embedded optical sensors that allow us to independently sense displacement on the surface, on the tabletop, into these islands that rested, as you can see in the top left-hand corner, rested under your thumb and forefinger. And your thumb and forefinger are the typical fingers that you use for multi-touch interactions. So what do people think of this? Is this a crazy one? So this one actually felt really nice to interact with because you had a lot of haptic feedback when you were actually holding the device. So here, we also had some buttons underneath the thumb and forefinger so you could press down. And that's how you actually activated those as touch points, effectively. So here you can see the sort of interactions that it enables. we really played around with the design. The designer on this work came from TU Delft, and you know, the design of the device was beautiful, I felt. So here we can actually stretch this this CAD model of the mouse using these touch gestures, but they're kind of in this wacky form factor. So anyway, this was a nice device to experiment with something that's way beyond the standard touch devices that we're used to. The other device, which is an interesting one, is a mouseless device. So this device basically rests underneath the palm of your hands, and instead of holding something like this, the device just rests under your hand and you can move it around, and then there's an infrared laser and a camera inside that can sense your fingers as you're touching the surface near the base, in front of the base. So here we see the camera image in the bottom left-hand corner, and as the fingers intersect with the laser, the fingers light up, and we can use very simple image processing to process this data and allow you to touch-enable your table surface. So that was the basic idea, a base that sits under the wrist of your arm and enables touch directly in front of the surface, but any tabletop surface can be used as a touch sensor now. So this was another wacky idea, but one which I think had some legs, actually. I quite like the idea of basically enabling touch anywhere on any tabletop surface. And then the final device, which again was a nice form factor, we call FTIR mouse. So this one, how many of you have seen or used the Arc mouse? Quick show of hands. Not that many of you, actually. It's a beautifully designed mouse, very very portable, and it has this really nice curve to it. And this was inspired, the FTIR mouse was inspired by that. So we, again, take a camera and embed it inside this mouse. It also has an optical sensor, so we can sense displacement on the surface. But the camera can see this sheet of acrylic that's been bent, and we can shine infrared light through this sheet of acrylic. It bounces around and scatters down towards the camera when we touch the surface. So this is a very cheap way of doing multi-touch sensing in a really nice form factor. And most of the mouse itself is clear acrylic, so it had a beautiful design to it, I think. So here we've retrofitted surface applications to use with the mouse. So we can actually send events to the surface application as if the application is being controlled by a multi-touch sensor. So it's a very cheap way of enabling surface computing. So that was the multi-touch mouse project. So just coming back and concluding, our work is really about hardware. It's about enabling new types of user experiences through radically new hardware. I've given you a few examples. Obviously, there's another example which we're currently very, very much focused on, which is Kinect. Again, this is a new type of device, new type of camera technology, a 3D camera, that led to radically new user experiences. So the kind of things to think about here is, Kinect is fantastic. The level of fidelity that you have in terms of input sensing is second to none. But what about output? We've not really thought about display technologies. The display is still pretty much the vertical, you know, flat screens that we have. So in the future, I think we're going to see a display revolution. You know, this is a flexible display. We can start to think about displays that can be, you know, rolled out like a sheet of paper, basically. I think that's one of the big innovations in the future. And just to finish up with one example, you guys said most of you were developers. We really want to attract people developing hardware and make it as easy as possible. And there's a project that's been started within our group, led by researchers Nicholas Villa and James Scott. And this is a new way of developing hardware. So it almost makes hardware like Lego. You don't have to solder. You don't have to program in C or, you know, program a PCB. You can program in .NET with C# and WPF. It's as simple as that. And there's a whole bunch of different components that can be attached together with ribbon cable, and you can build new types of hardware without really needing to know much about the hardware. All you need to know is C#. So that's something that we're really excited about. It's called .NET Gadgeteer, and I definitely recommend you guys look out for it on the web. So that's my talk. Thank you very much.